The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of Alice in Wonderland features decapitation and some discussion of pedophilia. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Alice shifted uncomfortably in her seat as the judge called the next witness. The door of the courtroom swung open to reveal a sour-looking woman in an apron and filthy brown dress. Alice realized with a start that this was the Duchess's cook. She only recognized her by the thick cloud of pepper that followed her into the room. The judge peered down at the cook and began his questioning. Just as with all the witnesses that had come before, it wasn't long before the courtroom descended into chaos. Alice reflected that the whole day had been chaos from start to finish. It had started when she'd chased a talking rabbit down a hole, and from there, things had only gotten stranger and stranger. She'd met a caterpillar who'd given her pieces of a mushroom to control her size, kicked a lizard named Bill out a chimney, and met a rather unsettling, grinning cat. If she had to have even one more bizarre and frustrating conversation, she was afraid she'd go mad. The thought reminded her of the Cheshire Cat's words, "We're all mad here." Just then, the judge banged his gavel and called for the next witness. There was a tense silence. Suddenly, the whole court seemed to be looking at her. Alice felt frozen in place as she heard a voice call out, "I call Alice to the stand." I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. This week, we're concluding our retelling of Alice in Wonderland. Though it's become a classic children's story, the original version reads more like a horrific fever dream. Alice finds herself lost in a mysterious land full of murderous queens and terrifying beasts. Although her biggest challenge turns out to be getting a grip on her own identity. Alice stood at the fork in the path. The Cheshire Cat had told her that the path on the left would lead her to the home of a March Hare, and the one on the right to that of the Hatter. He'd also said they were both mad. She let out a sigh. What she really wanted was to get back to the lovely garden she'd seen in the hall. She had a feeling that if only she could get there, everything would make sense again. Looking down one path, then the other, she let out a yelp. The Cheshire Cat had appeared in front of her again. Glaring at the cat, she asked,
"Would you mind not appearing and disappearing quite so suddenly? I've only just gotten used to the idea of you disappearing at all."
The cat offered his apologies. He said that he'd just come to give her a piece of advice.
"If you don't care where you're going, it doesn't matter which way you go."
Alice was going to ask what he meant by that when the cat began to disappear again. This time, though, it happened slowly. First, the cat's tail faded away, then his feet and legs, bit by bit, until all that was left was his mysterious grin, hanging in the air above her. Before long, Alice came to a clearing in the woods. A cottage was nestled within. In the front yard, a table had been put out under a willow tree. It was set for at least 14 people. But the only ones sitting at it were a large hare, a rather squat man, and a dormouse.
They were all much smaller than she was, so Alice pulled out a piece of the magic mushroom she'd gotten from the caterpillar. She nibbled it until she was the right size to approach the house. As Alice neared the table, the man called out,
"No room! There's no room for you!"
Straightening up indignantly, she said that there was plenty of room. She pulled out an armchair and sat down. The man ignored her, but the hare smiled and offered her some wine. Looking around the table, she saw that it was set with a number of mismatched teacups and saucers. There was a teapot and some biscuits and jam, but as far as she could see, there wasn't any wine. She pointed this out to the hare, and he agreed. There wasn't any wine. Alice told him in that case it wasn't very civil to offer it. The hare peered at her and said,
"Well, it wasn't very civil of you to sit down without being invited."
Earlier in the day, Alice might have agreed, but the more time she spent in this place, the more she saw that civility was actually quite pointless. Alice surveyed the man next to the hare. He was wearing an oversized top hat with a price tag stuck in it. This must have been the Hatter. He was examining his pocket watch and remarked that it was 2 days late. Then he sighed deeply and began dunking it into his teacup. The hare and the hatter started an argument about how best to fix a broken watch. The hare insisted that one must not use butter, while the hatter maintained that you can if it's the best butter. The dormouse, who they were both using as an elbow rest, was fast asleep. Though he never seemed to be fully awake, he occasionally chimed in with things like,
"Oh, yes."
And,
"Just what I was saying."
Eventually, the Hatter gave up and announced that everyone ought to have a new cup. At this, they all stood up and moved one place down. Alice noted, with annoyance, that the Hatter seemed to be the only one who actually got a clean cup out of the deal. The Hatter sighed and shook his head sadly.
"It's been this way since last March when I sang at the Queen's concert. I was just beginning my rendition of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Bat when the Queen shouted that I was murdering the time and she'd have my head cut off. Ever since then, time won't do a thing I ask, and it's always 6 o'clock.
The Hare explained that this was why they never had any time to do the washing up and instead had to switch places every time they wanted a new cup of tea. The Hatter looked wistfully at his watch. The Hare suggested that they take their minds off it by hearing a story from the Dormouse. They both began pinching it from either side. The Dormouse sat up, rubbed its eyes, and said blearily,
"I wasn't asleep. I heard every word you were saying. Now, what's going on?"
The Hatter commanded him to tell them a story. And Alice agreed. She was very interested in hearing from someone other than the Hatter and the Hare. The Dormouse began,
"There were once 3 sisters who lived in a treacle well. They were very ill and spent their time drawing treacle."
Alice asked how they could draw treacle from a well if they were in it. The Hatter gave her a haughty look and said,
"If you can draw water out of a water well, then you can draw treacle out of a treacle well. Anyone with a brain could see that."
She chose to ignore this remark and tried to argue her point. She began,
"Well, I don't think..."
The Hare interrupted her to say that if she didn't think, she shouldn't speak. This last insult was one too many. Alice got up and stormed off. She looked back after a few steps to see they were now trying to fit the snoring Dormouse into the teapot. She'd half hoped they might call after her. Alice hadn't been fond of any of them, but she was awfully tired of feeling like she wasn't wanted anywhere. If only she could feel like herself again. When she'd known who she was, plenty of people had wanted her around. This odd world was becoming something of a nightmare. That tea party didn't make any sense, drinking from dirty cups, talking with strange animals. The very words they said were infuriating. She kicked a pebble in anger. It skidded down the road and struck an odd-looking tree with a hollow thunk. Alice stepped closer to investigate and saw that the tree had a square door set into it. Wherever it led, it had to be better than these dim woods. Upon opening the door, Alice found herself looking into the tiled hallway where she'd begun her adventures. Her heart leapt. Alice had almost given up on finding the garden again. Alice entered the hallway and grabbed the gold key off the glass table. She nibbled at the caterpillar's mushroom until she was about a foot high. She unlocked the door and flung it open. Everything had been so strange and confusing ever since she'd fallen down the rabbit hole. Alice didn't feel like herself anymore. But once she made it to that pleasant garden, she would finally be able to clear her head and make sense of things. Alice hurried down the little passage that led to the garden. As she neared the end of it, she could hear birds singing and the distant babbling of a fountain. Suddenly, she was seized by a sense of trepidation. She shook her head. How could anything bad possibly happen in such a lovely place? Without a backward glance, Alice stepped out into the garden. Coming up, Alice learns that even in an idyllic garden, danger can be hiding in plain sight. Now, back to the story. Alice had been wanting to get to the garden ever since she first saw it through the little door. Everything had been so chaotic since she'd fallen down the rabbit hole. Somehow she'd known that if only she could gather her thoughts in a quiet, peaceful garden, she could finally make sense of who she was. Now that she was here, though, Alice noticed that there was something not quite right about it. It had seemed so lovely from afar, but up close, the grass was a little too green. The roses were certainly pretty, but there was something strange about them. Besides the fact that they were growing on trees and not bushes, the petals looked almost shiny, and some of them appeared to be dripping. As Alice got closer, she heard the sounds of an argument coming from behind one of the trees. She peeked through the foliage to see three men wearing large playing cards. They were the 5, 6, and 2 of spades. There were a few white roses remaining on the tree, and the men were in the middle of painting them red. The man on the left side jostled the one in the middle and called out,
"Watch what you're doing, 5!"
Just then, one of them noticed Alice staring. He nudged his friends, and they went quiet. All three gave a deep bow. Alice came closer. She saw that what she'd first taken to be costumes were actually large, thick playing cards. The men had paper skin that flattened at the places where it connected to the main body of the cards. Alice found them horrific. She was too afraid to ask how they came to be like this, and so she instead asked why they were painting the roses red. The 2 card stepped forward and began to wring his hands.
"You see, miss, we're the royal gardeners. We were meant to plant red rose trees, but have planted white ones instead. If the queen found out, I'm afraid she'd chop off our heads."
At that very moment, the 5 card, who'd been looking anxiously across the garden, nudged him and whispered,
"The queen! The queen!"
The 3 gardeners threw themselves to the ground at once. A grand procession was headed toward them. First came 10 soldier cards carrying clubs. Directly behind them were a number of card courtiers, their jackets accented with hearts and diamonds. Scattered among those were a few pairs of kings and queens. Alice was surprised to see the white rabbit amongst the procession as well. Finally, the Jack of Hearts walked past, alongside the King and Queen of Hearts. Alice looked the queen over. She had a rather large head. It was almost as big as the entire upper half of her body. She wore a brocade dress patterned with hearts and ornate checkered embroidery. Her face was already quite pink, but it only seemed to grow redder with each word she spoke. When the queen reached Alice, the whole procession came to a halt. She looked down and asked acidly,
"Who is this?" Alice gave a curtsy and introduced herself. The queen looked at the roses, dripping with paint. Then she looked down to the gardeners laying on the ground and quaking in fear. She asked,
"Who are these, and what have they done to my roses?"
Alice answered that it was none of her business. The queen's face went red with rage. She glared at Alice and began screaming,
"Off with her head! Off with her head!"
At this, the toucar jumped up and begged the queen's pardon in a trembling voice. He began to explain how they were painting the roses. Before he could get very far, the queen grunted,
"I see. Off with their heads, then."
The courtiers all nodded, and the procession moved on. Alice pulled the gardeners into a large flower pot and whispered that they wouldn't be beheaded as long as she was around. Three soldiers hung back to carry out the executions, but when they couldn't find the gardeners, they just shrugged their shoulders and ran back to the procession. Though she was quite nervous about the queen and her fondness for chopping off heads, Alice decided to join them. All day long, people had been talking about the queen. Maybe if Alice spent some time in her court, things would finally start to make sense. But this truly was a nightmare world if its ruler loved nothing more than to decapitate people. As she caught up to the procession, Alice spotted the white rabbit nervously wringing his hands. She began walking alongside him and asked if he had seen the Duchess. The rabbit's eyes went wide. In a low whisper, he informed Alice that the Duchess had been sentenced to death by beheading. Alice was about to ask what for, when the whole party came to a halt again. The queen looked to Alice and asked if she'd been to see the Mock Turtle yet. Alice shook her head and said she didn't even know what a Mock Turtle was. The queen looked at her disdainfully.
"Why, it's the thing Mock Turtle soup is made of. Now come along, I'll take you to meet him."
The queen led Alice up and over a hill. From there, Alice could see a cliff that looked out over the ocean. She pointed out two figures sitting forlornly against a stone wall. Then she muttered something about needing to go oversee some executions and wandered off. Alice squinted at the figures. She could see that they were a strange-looking pair, and one of them seemed to have very sharp claws. Alice supposed anything was safer than the murderous queen. Even so, she steeled herself for whoever was waiting at the edge of the cliff. Everyone she'd met today had been incredibly frustrating, insulting, or just downright mad. Whatever happened next, she was sure that it was bound to be a challenge. As Alice made her way down the hillside, the two creatures sitting at the edge of the cliff looked up at her. One was a turtle with the head, feet, and tail of a baby cow. The other was a griffin, a winged lion with the head of an eagle. If she'd seen either of these creatures this morning, she might have run away screaming. Now, though, after falling down the rabbit hole, joining a mad tea party, and playing croquet with a murderous queen, she wasn't afraid of anything. Alice walked up to the creatures and told them the queen had sent her. The griffin smiled widely, exposing a mouthful of sharp white teeth. He laughed and said,
"Oh, that old bat? Did she try to execute you yet? She never executes nobody, you know."
Alice said the queen had suggested she asked to hear the Mock Turtle's story. The Mock Turtle, who'd been quietly crying ever since Alice arrived, invited her to sit down. He said he'd gladly tell her his story and began by saying that he had once been a real turtle. At that, he broke down in hysterical sobs. Alice and the griffin waited an exceptionally long time for him to pull himself together. Finally, he began again.
"When we were little, we lived in the sea. There was an old turtle, and we called him the tortoise because he taught us. Every day we learned washing, reeling, and writhing. Then, of course, ambition, distraction, uglification, and derision."
Alice asked what uglification was, and the griffin rolled his eyes. He asked if she knew what beautification was. Alice said she did, and the griffin commented, Well then, if you don't understand what uglification is, you really are a simpleton.
Alice decided she would rather not ask any more questions. The turtle continued, saying that the old classics master, a crab, taught laughing and grief. He then put his head in his hands and began to sob again. Finally, the turtle looked up from his hands. He said perhaps she should tell him about her adventures, as he'd said quite enough about his own sad history. Alice agreed that she had had quite enough of it as well. She began to tell them the story of her own adventures. As Alice described all the trials she'd been through, she could not help feeling a bit proud of herself. She certainly was a different person than the one she'd been this morning. She still couldn't remember any of her verses, but she didn't mind so much anymore. As Alice was speaking, a horn blew somewhere in the distance. It was followed by the sound of shouting. As they ran off, she heard the Mock Turtle singing quietly to himself.
Soup, soup, beautiful soup.
Then he collapsed into sobs. The Griffin led Alice toward an imposing stone building. They entered it to find that most of the court had already taken their places. At the front of the room was the king, sitting atop a tall podium in a powdered white wig. The queen was at his side. Standing in front of them, chained at the hands and feet, was the Jack of Hearts. Alice and the Griffin quietly took their seats near the wood-paneled jury box. The jury was made up of birds and small animals. Each and every one of them were busily scribbling in notebooks. Alice leaned over to the Griffin and asked,
"Why are they all writing if the trial hasn't even begun yet?"
The Griffin explained that they were writing down their names in case they forgot them. It made about as much sense as anything in this place. One of the jurors' pencils kept making terrible squeaking sounds. Alice looked over at him and was surprised to see that it was Bill the lizard. Earlier in the day, she'd kicked him out of a chimney. Alice walked up behind Bill and snatched the pencil out of his hand. The lizard, thinking he had dropped it, looked around. When he was unable to find his pencil, he resorted to trying to write with a finger. Truly, everyone was mad here. Just then, Alice heard the sound of a gavel. She looked up to see the white rabbit standing at the front of the room, holding a scroll and a trumpet. Next, the trial begins. Now, back to the story. Alice had been wandering for hours through the bizarre world known as Wonderland. It was full of horrors. Now she was being forced to watch a trial that would surely end in a beheading. The rabbit blew several blasts on the trumpet and read out,
"The Queen of Hearts, she made some tarts all on a summer day. The Jack of Hearts, he stole those tarts and took them quite away."
The king banged his gavel and called for the jury to give their verdict. The rabbit quietly reminded him that first they needed to call witnesses. The king banged his gavel again and called out for the first witness. The Mad Hatter entered the courtroom, holding a cup of tea in one hand and a piece of toast in the other. He was followed by the March Hare and the Dormouse. Alice noticed that he looked terribly anxious. He took a seat and apologized for bringing his tea with him. The queen leaned over her podium and squinted at the Hatter, making him so nervous he took a bite out of his teacup instead of his toast. Alice felt a strange sensation in her limbs. Though she hadn't eaten any of the mushroom in her pocket, she was beginning to grow. Nothing could stay calm or normal for more than a few minutes in this place. The Dormouse, who had taken the seat next to her, shifted uncomfortably. He told Alice that he wished she would stop growing. She wanted to cry. Here she was, suffering from an affliction, and no one would help her. They just told her to stop something she couldn't prevent. The queen pursed her lips at the Hatter. She leaned over to one of the officers and asked him to fetch a list of the court singers from March.
Alice remembered the story the Hatter had told her about how he'd sung for the Queen in March, and she'd ordered him beheaded. As soon as the officer came back with the list, the Hatter gave a shriek and ran out of the courtroom. The next witness was the Duchess's cook, followed by a cloud of pepper. Once she'd taken a seat in the witness box, the Queen sneezed and asked what the tarts were made of. The cook gave a sniff and said,
"Pepper, mostly."
At this, the Dormouse chimed in sleepily that the tarts were made of treacle. The Queen yelled for his head to come off. In the ensuing commotion, the cook snuck out of the courtroom. Madness, thought Alice. Once the hubbub had died down, the king demanded that the rabbit skip ahead to the last witness. He fumbled for a moment with his scroll and then looked directly at Alice and called her name. Alice jumped up. She'd grown quite large since the trial had begun. As she made her way to the witness stand, she knocked over the jury box. Alice apologized profusely. She felt like a ridiculous, clumsy oaf. She put the jury box back in place before picking up each juror and putting them back. In her haste to get to the witness stand, she accidentally placed poor Bill upside down. Once Alice was finished with the jury, the king peered up at her and asked what she knew about the business with the tarts. She answered that she knew nothing at all. The king nodded and turned to the jury.
"Write that down. That's very important."
Alice noted that it was actually very unimportant. When would this nightmare end? The king banged his gavel and said,
"Rule 42. All persons more than a mile high to leave the court. Now let's hear the evidence."
The rabbit handed him an envelope, saying it had been found in the prisoner's cell. The king unsealed it and began to read,
"My notion was that you had been, before she had this fit, an obstacle that came between him and ourselves and it."
Alice thought she'd never heard such nonsense in her life. The king frowned and said this was damning evidence indeed. He turned to the queen and asked,
"Now the line about having a fit, that couldn't be referring to you, dear, as you don't have fits."
The queen flung an inkpot across the room and yelled,
"Yes, never!"
Bill, who had just managed to get back onto his feet, was struck squarely in the head. When he recovered, he happily used the ink dripping from his forehead to write with. At this point, the Jack yelled out that he couldn't possibly have written the verses as he hadn't signed them. The queen considered this and then called out for a sentence. Alice yelled,
"What nonsense! You can't have a sentence without a verdict."
The queen turned purple with rage and told her to hold her tongue. Alice was fed up with the whole ordeal. She said she'd do no such thing. When the queen called for her head to come off, Alice yelled,
"Who cares about what you think? Why, you're nothing but a pack of cards!"
At that, the whole courtroom went silent. Suddenly, Alice felt as if she were shrinking. That or the courtroom was growing. Everything seemed to be looming over her. The soldiers all stood up at once and began advancing on the witness stand. Then the king, the queen, and the jury all flew up out of their seats. Everyone was headed toward Alice. Alice gave a shriek and held up her hands to protect herself. A flurry of playing cards cascaded over her. She beat at them with her hands, squeezing her eyes shut to protect from paper cuts. She felt the floor disappear beneath her, and she fell, still fighting the playing cards smothering her from every angle. Her chaotic fall stretched on for hours, just like it had when she first jumped down the rabbit hole that morning. Only this time, she was falling up. Alice opened her eyes to find herself covered in leaves. She'd been sleeping in the lap of her older sister, Lorena. It had all been a dream. Thank God, it really was a nightmare. She smiled up at her sister and immediately began to tell her about what a peculiar dream she had had. Lorena listened patiently.
When Alice had finished, she smiled and said,
"I suppose you must have worked up an appetite. We can't have you late for tea."
Lorena watched her sister skip off to tea. As she leaned back against the tree, she pictured all the things from Alice's dream. She closed her eyes and imagined that she could hear the splashing of the mouse, the clinking of the Mad Hatter's china, and the sobbing of the Mock Turtle. When she opened her eyes again, the sounds of the fantastical creatures turned back into the ordinary sounds of a boat in the river, a clanking cowbell, and a bleating sheep. She thought of how when she was as young as Alice, everything seemed just as simple as this. But life became more complicated as one got older. She couldn't sit by the river forever, ignoring responsibility. She got up, following Alice back into the real world. Since its first publication in 1865, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland has garnered an enormous volume of scholarly criticism and analysis. One reason for this is a morbid fascination with Dodgson's possible pedophilia, but the story also lends itself well to interpretation. Its intentionally nonsensical elements have led plenty of scholars, philosophers, and psychoanalysts to take on the task of wringing meaning from the befuddling narrative. Part of what makes Alice's Adventures in Wonderland so unique is the fact that it was not intended to have any scholarly interpretation at all. Charles Dodgson created the story on a boating trip with Alice Little and her two sisters. He filled it with inside jokes and references that only the sisters would have understood. Of course, anytime a storyteller creates something off the cuff, they can't help imposing some elements of their own subconscious onto the text. In many ways, Alice's journey through Wonderland reflects the child's journey through adolescence and into adulthood. Alice struggles with her changing body and finds herself adrift in a world where she must become increasingly self-reliant. It doesn't seem like too much of a stretch to assume that the awkward and antisocial Dodgson struggled to make his way in the world as well. Whether or not Dodgson was a pedophile, it is clear that he had a profound obsession with childhood. In the book, Alice is frequently portrayed as the only sensible, logical character. She's contrasted with the authoritative inhabitants of Wonderland, who are confusing and contradictory. Alice eventually makes it out of Wonderland. She gains enough confidence and self-assurance to declare, "You are nothing but a pack of cards." Many analysts wonder whether Dodgson was able to make it out of Wonderland himself. Was he a well-adjusted adult or a stunted pedophile, forever wandering the dangerous and confusing paths of the Wonderland woods? We may never know, but the image we're left with at the end of the books is a telling one. Alice's older sister sits on the banks of the river, picturing Alice. She's haunted by images of a childhood fancy and wishing that Alice could remain forever a child at heart. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next week with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, at Parcast, and Twitter, at Parcast Network. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Carrie Murphy, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Tales was written by Zoe Louisa Lewis, with writing assistance by Greg Castro. I'm Vanessa Richardson.